Good morning, everyone. John Huckenberry here. I'm with Majora Carter, host of American Public Media's radio show, The Promised Land. And la, 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 la. It's the season to
give to be and giving, give yes. and give and give some more.
And you who do sort of God's work here on Earth, I mean, you're involved in so many great organizations up in the South Bronx. Mm-hmm. I mean, I imagine giving is a big part of your sort of holiday season.
Yes, it still is, even though I wish I could give more. And how you give, even though it feels like the issues are huge and just don't get any smaller, still people still feel compelled to give, which is we're very excited.
Lots of institutions out there to give to. Sometimes it's intimidating to me. I stick with my same old charitable donations year after year. But you're a little more diverse than I am.
Yeah, I do. I have a lot of national and local groups that I love to give to. But we're joined here today by Beth Kolbelliner, takeaway contributor and appointee to the President's Advisory Council on Financial Capability.
Sure. Best friend of the takeaway, Beth Kolbelliner, by the way.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Yes. You're my best friend, too.
Oh, good. And so we're going to talk about some stats and trends on charitable giving.
Right. It's a tricky time of year when it comes to giving.
And, when we talk about the trends, you know, we're in the middle of a recession right now.
Right.
What do we see right now in terms of the trends and patterns, both in terms of who gives and why?
Well, last year, giving went way down. In fact, it was at a 20-year low. So charitable organizations were really hitting rock bottom. People were not giving. And now we're seeing a little bump up. We're seeing more, you know, people reporting that they're starting to see more money coming in. But charities are saying they're still seeing people, instead of giving money, giving their time, volunteering. Volunteerism is up.
Right.
A lot of charities, instead of hiring people to do the work they used to do, are asking for volunteers to do that same work, whether it be publicity or writing or helping out or handing out food in food kitchens, whatever it is. They're trying to get non-paid workers to do it, you know, and that field makes the people who are giving, who maybe don't have the cash to give, feel good about
giving. So the cash may be sparse. That's the economics. The impulse is
right.
Still there. Stephanie Brown, who's a bioethics professor at State University of New York, Stony Brook, and also on the faculty at the University of Michigan, joins us this morning. Professor, good morning.
Good morning.
The impulse to give, the economics of it are fairly clear, but what's more of the sort of psychology and ethics of giving? It's not just a holiday thing we're talking about here, right?
Right. Our work suggests that the impulse to give is probably a hardwired response to seeing other people in need. And there are many factors that inhibit that response, but when we see giving, it's a pretty natural, organic kind of thing we do.
So, Stephanie, is there more of a type of person that particular people like to give to? I mean, what makes for that selective investment theory?
The theory that you mentioned, I developed as a way to understand the evolution of this impulse to help others. And part of the problem from an evolutionary perspective of giving to others is that it risks exploitation. And because of that, I've argued we need to be especially sensitive to signs of vulnerability in others, cues that that when we do give, it won't be exploited. Another cue that's critical for us is a sense of interdependence with the recipient, or even a social bond, a close relationship that we might form. We give to people because we love them unconditionally. That giving is actually the function of our close relationships.
Does cash sometimes, though, Stephanie Brown, get in the way of maintaining that bond? In the sense that you sort of write the check, the problem is solved. As you know, Majora, a lot of the problems don't end up getting solved.
That's a really interesting question because you're right. You can imagine giving for a variety of different reasons and from a variety of different motivational states. And certainly giving money to just make a problem go away isn't necessarily going to come from that same neurobiological system that was designed by evolution to get us to care for others.
Mm. So, Beth, in terms of demographics, who's actually most likely to give?
Right. Well, not surprisingly, religious people – well, maybe it's a surprise for some people, but not surprisingly, religious people tend to give more than people who say they're not religious. And people who say they're more religious – tend to have a lower income on average than people who say they're not religious. So they are giving more. And interestingly, those people who say they are religious are giving to non-religious causes at a faster rate than, yes, the non-religious people.
All right, so Stephanie suggests that there's this bond that's really important ethically and psychologically. Beth, you're suggesting that people with lower incomes often are better givers.
Mm-hmm.
How do you create a plan in your budget during the year to make sure that at the end of the year or at the time that, you want to give, you have the resources to create this bond that Stephanie suggests is so important?
Right. Well, I think that I'm a real believer in you can't give what you don't have. So I think people are bombarded, and I think that you have to be selective in how you give. And you have to have a either whether it's a giving budget or just like you're supposed to save 10% of your income. You know, certain religions tithe 10% of their income. That's pretty one end of the spectrum. If you don't have a job this year and you're hounded by phone calls and, you know, every time you go to Staples, you want to buy something, they say, well, you give $2 to this charity or that charity. As worthy as it is, you may have to say no and not feel embarrassed about it. So I think once you have a sort of budget in mind, you can kind of try to stick with that. Of course, you want to get receipts to see if you can deduct these items.
Right.
And we have some tax incentives built into our tax code. But the vast majority of people don't itemize their taxes. So people always think, oh, I collected all these receipts. Hey, but I don't itemize my taxes. Well, that doesn't really help me.
Beth Kohlbeiner, advice on giving, takeaway work, and personal finance contributor, author of Get a Financial Life. And Stephanie Brown, thanks to her, bioethics professor at State University of New York, Stony Brook, on the psychology and the economics of giving in the holiday season. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.